Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's do this. I'm going to do a big yawn. There we go. Right. It's fine.
Well, that's going right at the beginning of the podcast.
Excellent. Starting me doing a great big yawn and stretch.
There's no way Rockfield will keep that out. Right. Stand by.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This wow. is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the newly repaired Victorian cider press that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the worn-out old screw we desperately need to replace that is...
Angela Barnes.
And
thanks
the last
for that, Robert.
Part of this... Oh, it's my pleasure. Worth waiting for.
Yeah.
And the last part of this very special Grundy Cider Club, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum is from Vicky Cole. Thanks, Vicky. Angela, if someone wants to send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or if you have a growing interest in the lost industries of the Felpersham Canal, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek actually came along to our Brighton meetup on Saturday, although he was quite late after he got lost and ended up in a notorious leather bar. Anyway, he came in the end and admits he rather enjoyed the big hand he received on his entrance.
Oh.
Oh.
Now, this week's this week's episode, we hear views from young Keith, Father Kevin, who's a new caller, Christopher, Ash, Dr. Nicola Headlam, no less, and emails from Chris and Fiona. But first, before the calls, let's brace ourselves for Angela Barnes's Week in Ambridge.
We started this week with the worst parenting decision since Cinderella's dad decided to remarry, as Adam let Kate disappear with Xander to clean his chakras or something. Now, look, I might not be a parent, but I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't trust Kate to look after my houseplants. I'd expect her to at least leave the baby on a bus, bearing in mind she managed to leave her own kids on another continent. And Kate appears to be getting broody, God help us. Although, thinking about it, I think a Jacob and Kate offspring could make for an interesting future character arc. Some sort of narcissistic vegan serial killer. Elsewhere, Lizzie is making plans for Deck the Hall at Lower Loxley. I get really excited about Deck the Hall because I bloody love a Christmas market. I love that stuff. I'm not sure when Christmas here got so German, but that's a thing now, isn't it? Your German Christmas market, loads of wooden huts selling foreign food, like sort of outdoor Lidl's. I wonder if you go to Bavaria and there's an English Christmas market, just a bloke in a Santa hat selling three lighters for a fiver. I don't know. But I think she's worrying too much about Deck the Hall because we all love a rubbish winter wonderland. Like, they're the best ones, aren't they? Where you can see Rudolph having a fag out the back and where the Father Christmas looks more like a father for justice. Anyway, Liz wondered whether Linda might like to help put on a play or something to liven up Deck the Hall, but Linda refused, saying she has a thirst for different challenges now. Her interests have gone from Geoffrey Chaucer to Geoffrey Boycott, and she seems determined to learn all things cricket. I've never understood cricket. I don't get it. Or golf,
Angela, you disappeared a little bit there.
Oh, hello. Where did I get up to?
You disappeared a little bit there.
That's weird. Can you hear me now?
You got up to Linda. Linda okay. Disappearing.
Should I go back a bit? I mean, this will all go in, won't it? So, you know, smooth this is. Linda refused to help, saying that she's now got a thirst for different challenges. Her interests have gone from Geoffrey Chaucer to Geoffrey Boycott, and she seems determined to learn all things cricket. Personally, I've never understood cricket or golf. I don't think you can call something a sport if you can do it wearing a jumper, but maybe that's just me. besides, Lizzie, you don't need a play. You've got your alcohol license back now. That's all you need to get a Christmas fair going with a swing. You just need to mull everything. That's the best bit about Christmas, the mulling. I love mulled stuff. Why do we only do it at Christmas? I've had mulled wine, mulled cider, mulled vodka. I went to a winter wonderland in Croydon once, mulled WKD. Brilliant. Now, this week, my heart really went out to poor Basil the Boar. In this current post-Me Too climate, I'm horrified that people still can't just accept that no means no. Leave the poor bugger alone. And then Toby went to Kate for advice on how to jolly up Basil's libido. Kate, why would you go to Kate? If you want to get a pig excited, everyone knows the person you go to is Rebecca Lewes. Remember that? I don't know if people will get that reference, but tweet me and I'll tell you. Kate refused to help on grounds of her veganism, and surprisingly not on grounds of it just being fucking mental. So instead, Toby improvised with a lemon-scented citronella candle in Basil's sty. As if lemon-scented candles are going to work. If things that smelt lemon fresh made you horny, nobody would ever finish cleaning their bathrooms. Eventually, it turned out that Toby fed Basil half a barrel of rotting cider apples, which fermented in his stomach and got him tipsy, but ultimately did the trick. And in my experience of sleeping with pigs, of which I have much, getting them pissed certainly does increase their libido, but luckily not their ability to do anything with it. So I'm not sure we're going to have too many baby Basils coming along just yet. Eddie and Edward headed off to Lower Loxley looking for a screw. Well, if it worked for Roy Tucker. No, they're there at the Borsetshire Bygones display where Oliver has tipped them off that they might find the missing bit they need for their knackered cider press to work. Eventually, Lizzie agrees that they can have a screw as long as they film it. Hey, we've all been there. Over at Beechwood, Philip's up a ladder installing some bird feeders. What is it with the archers and ladders recently? Are they being sponsored by the Health and Safety Executive? Kirsty kept cooing about baby Xander. Understandable given what she's been through. And how does Philip sensitively respond to it when she admits that Xander is the first baby she's been able to be around since she lost hers? Well, he starts off by making it pretty clear he doesn't want babies, and then he immediately makes it clear that he would, however, like to take the wine upstairs and do the thing that definitely creates the babies that he definitely doesn't want. Yes, that should sort her head out. Philip, sensitively done. Nice one. Then there was some business with Joy Horville asking for help with her electrics, and Kirsty and Philip getting locked out of their house and having to spend time with her till they could get back in. And I think we're supposed to feel sorry for them, but I think I might be on Team Joy. I mean, Christ, I'd rather spend the night watching videos of her granddaughter's tap dancing than hear Kirsty's views on the proliferation of Swifts. I think Joy's just a bit lonely. I can feel one of those sort of annoying busybody ends up becoming an Ambridge treasure a la Linda Snell patterns coming on. And at the moment, I'm struggling to see a point to Joy other than she's just a bloody annoying woman. And I'd rather we just skip that and get straight into making her a rounded and sympathetic character, which she's bound to eventually be. The way Joy's being portrayed right now feels old and hack and just a bit sexist. Sorry. Roy went and said goodbye to Lexi in the Shepherd's Hut and gave her a signed horror book, which I suppose is as good a parting gift as any. Clintons have yet to nail the sorry you're leaving again after telling me you love me but inexplicably deciding not to be with me before having a baby for my neighbours who you barely know without any thought to what that might do to my feelings greeting cards. And finally this week we said goodnight to Joe Grundy, who I think might have had the best death you could ever hope for. 98 years old, and he spent his last night pissed on homemade cider and taking the mickey out of his mates. The only way that could have been a better Joe Grundy death is if he had a ferret up his trouser leg and Bert Fry in a friendly headlock. I'm going to miss your voice, Joe Grundy. I was talking about him with my boyfriend, who doesn't listen to the Archers, and he asked me to describe who Joe Grundy was. And I said, you know, when you take the mickey out of the Archers, you do that voice that you think everyone in the Archers talks with. I said, that's Joe Grundy. And so in homage to the great man, I'm going to be spending the rest of this week calling everyone by their full name. So over to you, Robert Wilson.
Well, thank you, Angela Barnes. Oh, no, that was more like that.
It's a bit like the Vicar of Debbie, that.
It was a bit, no, but yes, but...
Oh, everyone knew what I was trying to do. I've spent half the weekend trying to be Brian the Camel in the local pantomime. More of that later.
Oh.
I imagine. Thank you very much, Angela. Roy and Lexi.
It's none of it rings true to me. The surrogacy, just, I know it's been talked about a lot on Dumpty Dum, so particularly over the last few weeks, but I just don't think she would have done it. She barely knew them. I don't know. Maybe I'm being cruel, but would you jeopardise a healthy relationship that you're in to help some people that you barely know have a baby? I don't know.
No, that just sounds really odd.
Unless you were doing it for money, but she wasn't doing it for money. So, you know, it just doesn't ring true.
There is such a thing as true altruism, though, isn't there? That you don't do it for the people, you do it for the good it creates. But, yeah, it's...
If you were going to do that, like, pick a nice couple to do it for. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I would, if I was going to gift somebody with a child they were longing for, I'd want somebody less tedious than Adam to be a parent. Hmm.
Yeah, because it's, you wouldn't want to saddle, a sperm with him, or his sperm with an egg, and produce something that, I don't know what I'm talking about there. Can I start that again? Yeah. You know what I mean? You don't want to saddle some poor child with him as a father for the next 30 years.
Exactly. I'm sure there's more deserving people out there who are wanting to be parents.
And he doesn't seem... I mean, he was never that keen, was he? And then...
Well, the first opportunity he's got, he's off to Kate. Ian has one shower and Adam's handed the baby over
and
to...
And suddenly...
Baby's gone. It's insane.
I was thinking that. And he's like, we need to tidy the house. And you think... Listen, the house isn't untidy when it's 3 weeks old. It's when it's 3 years old and, it's wall-to-wall Lego bricks.
Exactly. It's like, mate, you're not going to have a tidy house for 15 years. Get used to it. That's...
Exactly. Yeah. They don't have a cleaner, do they? They should... I would have thought they'd have a cleaner.
Sure they do. I'm sure they must do.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to pay a cleaner extra if you have a baby, don't you? I don't know. We wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. But no. None of that, rang true. And then Kate disappearing with the baby and,
I quite like the Kate and the pig and her annoyance.
I mean, it's one of those very silly things the script writers put in every now and then that it's sort of frustrating, but we allow it because it's quite funny when those two people are talking at cross purposes that just would never happen in real life, because you'd be like, are you asking me to wank off a pig? You'd be straight in there with, hang on a minute, what are you asking me to do here? Yeah, those sort of when she was just like, oh, Toby, is it your friend Basil? Is it, that's what what we love the Archers for, isn't it? The sort of gently amusing silliness like that.
Yeah. Well, I was involved in a bit of a Twitter thread regarding artificial insemination of the porcine variety.
Right.
Because.
Oh, sorry, I haven't turned my phone off. Let me. I have turned it off. Why is stuff coming through? Naughty phone.
I don't know.
That's weird. Oh, it's coming through on my laptop. That's why. Yeah. Sorry.
So anyway, I had a friend who he was a geneticist by trade, doctor of genetics, and for I was about to say for work experience or day release or whatever. He went to work as part of his research on a pig farm. And it was his job to take the pig in hand.
I think I said it more coarsely earlier, but
yes, I know. So he had to toss off a pig, and he went into very, very precise detail on how to do this, but which I'm not going to go into now. But he did wear a glove.
It's probably not that easy because one thing I do know about pigs from a book of facts I had when I was a child is mm-hmm. that their penises are corkscrew shaped.
Not
as easy probably as you'd think. I mean, we've gone very early on down an alley that we should probably have backed out of.
Yes. Right. About turn and march back out to the main road.
Back to the safety of the well-lit streets.
Yeah. Let's go down into the cellar with Jolene and
Lillian. Oh, poor Lillian.
Why is Jolene changing the kegs when the pub isn't open?
Right, I was going to ask you about this because you're likely to know this stuff. Yeah. Because, right, I mean, I used to work in pubs when I was a student, and you only change a keg when it's empty, right? And you're only going to empty it when you've poured the last pint.
Yeah, and you're not going to say, it's half past eight. We won't bother putting the Heineken on until 11 o'clock tomorrow morning because we might be in danger of selling another 20 pints tonight at £4.50. Yeah. We won't bother doing that. We'll leave it till tomorrow so we can have this convenient little chat.
Yeah, it seemed a very strange thing for them. I mean, they could have been doing anything in the cellar. Why do they have to be doing a thing that they definitely wouldn't be doing?
I don't know. I think it's because people... They have obviously an agricultural advisor, but they don't have an alcohol advisor.
No, maybe they need.
Maybe
somebody.
I could be the Archer's catering advisor.
Yeah, I think you should, because that's your job, isn't it? There you go.
Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, that annoys me as well. She said, "I've got to change this keg." I thought, why are you changing it now?
Don't know. The other thing that didn't ring true for me was when Philip and Kirsty were locked out of their brand new house. And brand new houses have thumb locks on them, so you can't lock yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just silly. No one, because you have to lock a door behind you, don't you, now, most new houses?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, do that thing where you lift the handle and it's. So that for a start didn't ring true. And I'm just finding the whole joy thing. I don't know. It's always a woman, isn't it? It's always a boring old woman. I'm like, oh, why is it so one-dimensional?
Why bring her in? Lower class as well.
Always working class. Always just, you know, she's just lonely. Like, don't be horrible about her. She's just clearly craving some company. And to talk about her, I don't know. It annoys me that those characters are always women and they're always portrayed as this sort of stupid, one-dimensional, annoying neighbour. You know, it's what Linda was originally, really, wasn't it? Except a sort of middle-class version. And then eventually she'll be, you know, we'll take her to her hearts and she'll be a rounded character. It's like, can we not just start with a woman as a rounded character? Can we do that, maybe? Yeah.
I know. I think that's annoyed quite a few people this week.
Yeah. And none of that rang true and the, you know... the showreel stuff and it's just, I don't know. I couldn't see the point in any of that. It made me cross.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
But I do think that what Philip was so extraordinarily insensitive to Kirsty. Like, fine, he might not want children, but I'm in my 40s. I've been with my fella for 5 years. So we were in our late 30s when we got together. And let me tell you, before I moved into a house with him, I made damn sure that we were on the same page regarding children. I don't believe Kirsty would have, you know, moved into the house, decided she's going to spend the rest of her life with it, and then not even broach that subject. That doesn't ring true.
No. I mean, she did mention, she said that it was the first child she was comfortable being around and that... that had made her re-examine her feelings.
But I think she, you know, the fact that she'd been pregnant and lost a child might have made him think, well, she wanted a child before. Why would she, you know, who's to say she's not going to want one? You'd think that something. You'd ask those questions. I certainly would.
I would have asked that question, yes. I would definitely have asked.
Especially if you're adamant that it's not what you want. Then it's not fair to get someone moved into your house, settled in, and then go, oh, by the way, you know.
So do you reckon it's okay, say, as a bloke, which I am, and you get together with a woman and you don't particularly want kids, but they do, is it okay for you to then say, well, I will have children with you? Because I guess when you have them, you kind of... Oh, God, it sounds terrible, don't I?
I mean, you
grow to love them, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have children. And my partner and I had that discussion before we got together and we were both on the same page that we didn't want children. So that's fine. I think it's difficult, isn't it? But I think when you get to a certain age, definitely, I think it's hard if you get together when you're younger and sort of 10 years down the line, you have to make that decision and then, you know, you want different things. That's difficult. Yeah. But I think if you meet someone when you're of a certain age, it's just you just have to have that conversation early on before you get too involved. You know, and because I don't know, maybe it's because I'm from, you know, both my parents were divorced twice each, you know. So I very much am aware that of how complicated step families can be and all of that business. And so if I was going to have children with someone, I'd want to make sure it was absolutely right, you know. And to have children with someone who has said they don't want children, but they'll do it if it makes you happy. Well, that doesn't sound to me like that's a good situation to be bringing up a child in.
Okay.
But maybe that's just me. You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's difficult. I'm sure that happens all the time. But it just seemed weird to me that they wouldn't have, especially as he's so adamant, you know, that he didn't want children.
So where's it going to go for them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, poor Kirsty. I mean, I feel for Kirsty. She's got some worse taste in men. Than anyone. I mean, she, you know, first sausage boy lets her down, and now she's with someone, and she sort of said, "Oh no, I'm the happiest I've ever been, so I'll make the sacrifices." Basically, it's like, well, it strikes me, Kirsty, that you do a lot of making sacrifices, and maybe if you want kids and he doesn't, then maybe get out and find someone who, you know, can give you what you really want. I don't know.
You know, I've just realised that they had this whole conversation was set in and around them putting up a bird box for birds to put a little nest in and have little baby birds.
Oh, very symbolic. Yeah.
That's the arches for you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm sure we'll get on to Joe Grundy. Joe Grundy during the call. Shall we take our first call?
Yes, let's.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
This is Young Keith.
Hello, Young Keith here. Just sort of been catching up over the last few weeks, but I have been particularly irritated by a few different characters. Philip wound me up this week when he got his Merlot, opened it, and then just popped it on the side to breathe. Something that I don't think a £6.99 screw top bottle of Merlot from the co-op needs to be left to breathe. And I've actually really enjoyed Russell being back on the show. It's been a while, Russ. But I think he's been getting some acting lessons from Adam's actor. I definitely feel they sat down over a French press of coffee and shared a few tips. Try to sound more strained and smug at the same time. It's the rosemary. Not bad. Anyway, hope you're having a good week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye,
by the way, if I wish my local co-op did Merlot at £6.99 a bottle. I mean, you can't get anything under £8.25 here in Oxford. But,
Well, if you will live in Oxford, you need to live somewhere more scummy. Or learn to love Lambrini.
I need something to clean the brakes on my bike, so I might buy a bottle later. But he's absolutely right. Screw cap Merlot. Right, I'm speaking with my catering hat on now.
Did he say it was a screw cap Merlot, or was he just insinuating it was a screw cap Merlot?
Well, we didn't there's nothing wrong with Screwcap, but we didn't hear a cork pop, did we?
Ah, right. He might have opened it earlier, in which case it'd already breathe. Well, no, you're right. He's a moron. Yeah.
And you can't a bottle of wine can't breathe without you pouring it into a decanter. Because you've got an amount of surface area akin to a postage stamp exposed to the air, so it's going to take an awful long time for that to breathe and chambre, as we say in the business.
Get you.
But most you don't need to let most wines breathe.
No, really. Certainly not. Like, say, one for the corner shop.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I don't think that's the most annoying thing Philip's done this week, but sure, we'll...
No. We've already touched on that, haven't we?
We've touched on that, yeah. And what about Russ?
And then Russ. Well, he popped up, was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it, when Tracy Horribin went round for Sunday Roast?
Yeah.
And I loved it because she just didn't take any of his shit.
Yeah, I love Tracy, but she wasn't in it this week, but...
No.
Good Tracy. She's one of those working class irritating characters that they've suddenly decided to turn into someone we're
Queen
supposed to like.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always had a bit of a soft spot for Tracy, but it is the Joy. What they've done with Joy Horvin is way more in your face than Tracy, I think. And just not with no, like Tracy always had, there's always a humour about Tracy, even when she was being, you know, when she was flirting with Roy or when she was, you know, whatever she's done, there's been a sort of, it's been done with humour. With Joy Horvin, it just seems to be humourless old bat, you know? Did you know the woman who plays Joy Horvin? I didn't realise this till the other day. I thought, I really know her voice. Where do I know it from? And she was Jacko's love interest in Brushstrokes.
Oh, really? Oh, God, that's going back sometime.
Yeah, isn't it? I used to love Brushstrokes when I used to watch it when I was a kid and loved it.
You must have been allowed specially to stay up late to
watch
that.
I think I was. I loved it. And she was the, his sort of love interest in it, Geordie. Anyway, that's who she is. Because it was really bugging me. I knew her voice. And there you go.
All right. I'll look her up. Folks, Google her. All right. Let's hear from a man of the cloth now.
This is Father Kevin from Boston, Massachusetts, a first-time caller-inner. I've been listening to The Archers for about 6 years, which I think makes me a Rob Titchener.
Ooh.
I'm calling because I'd like to complain about Shula, specifically about her ordination process. I'm an Episcopal priest, which is like the American version of the Church of England, and Shula's interest in ordination has been driving me crazy. It may be different in the Church of England, but here those discerning holy orders would have a discernment committee of lay people in their parish who meet with the aspirant to test their vocation, and they'd ask some difficult questions. Why do you feel God is calling you to this work? Is this all about you? Why do you need to be ordained to serve God, etc.? And first of all, I don't think you could find 4 or 5 people at St. Stephen's who actually like Shula, and I think that includes Alan. Who, by the way, has all of the charisma of wet cardboard.
Oh, I'm not in that.
A while back, Tracy Horribin asked Shula about becoming a priest, and Shula told her to mind her own damn business. Not exactly the most pastoral response. And actually, I think Tracy would make a much more interesting vicar than Shula, because we all love Tracy. I'm also interested to see how long this process takes. I was in discernment for over a year and then in seminary for 3 years before my ordination. And it seems like people in Ambridge complete a college degree in about a year and a half. Although the gestational age in Ambridge also seems to be about a year and a half. Welcome, baby Xander. So I predict that Shula will ultimately not be approved for ordination. And it will be a huge drama. And I am not looking forward to hearing about her whining about it for months. So that's it. Thanks. Bye.
Do you know what? I was with him. I was with him on Shula until he's called my Alan some wet cardboard. I'm not having that. I'm not having it.
I'll have you know, we like wet cardboard in Britain. Most cardboard is wet.
Exactly.
Especially today.
It's very hard to keep it dry in our climate. And I love Alan. I do. I think he's a sweet. I think it's partly because I love John Telfer, who plays him. You know, and there's something about, because he rides a motorbike and he's like a hot priest, isn't he, Alan? He's a bit of a hot priest. Not quite like a hot priest. It's like Fleabag, the hot priest.
Yeah. Yeah, you thought Fleabag did it first. The Archers was there way before.
The Archers always done it first, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, until you said that, I was with you, Father Kevin, but I have to take you to task on that. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a point, hasn't he? I love that.
Yeah.
You've struggled to find four or five people who like her in the congregation at St. Stephen's. Do you know, I think this might have been discussed. Now, I can't remember now if this was discussed on Dumpty Dum or I've seen it discussed on Twitter. But I recently read, you know, there's these like novelizations of the Archers from way back. Like, so I can't remember the name of the woman who's written them, but there's a couple of them. And I listened to the audiobooks of them in my car. And like Shula back in the day was a bit of a one, right? I mean, she
would sleep
with married men and were, you know. So when did suddenly pious hair shirt Shula appear?
I don't know, but I'd rather have the old one back. Sleeping with married men sounded much
more fun and just a sort of decadent, horsey woman, you know. I mean, I think her ordination process, it will be interesting to hear. I've got a friend who's going through it at the moment, and she is, it's really tough. Like, it doesn't just happen. And she's
Have to learn the Bible off by heart and everything?
Well, probably, yeah. But it's just, it's more the sort of, you know, she has to go to church. Obviously, she goes to church anyway. But that'd be a shit vicar if you didn't go to church. But you know, just the amount of work she has to put in. She has to write essays and is constantly being questioned on her vocation and you know, whether it is her calling and you know, it almost feels like they're trying to catch you out a bit, I think, in the process sometimes to make sure it is your vocation, I suppose. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. The main problem with it is that Robert is, I don't give a shit if she becomes a vicar or not.
No.
You know, it's hard, isn't it? Exactly. Because she's just, who cares? Just as long as we've got Alan.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, she might as well be training as a landscape gardener or, you know, fish husbandry.
Yeah.
But she could give Adam a bit of a hand, yeah. I guess. But no one cares.
No.
You should have just stayed in that ice hotel. You know, just licked the wall of the ice hotel so your tongue stuck to it, and then he should have left you there.
Yeah.
Alistair should have left you there. And Alistair's the other way around now. And I've said this before on Dumpty Dum, is he was, I mean, Lucy used to call him boring. And he's not boring at all now.
He's
really interesting. He's got depth to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He's got a lovely voice.
A lovely voice. And he's a vet, you know, so he loves animals. And he's an attractive. I hope he finds someone really nice and she doesn't.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Best of luck, Shula. And thank you, Father Kevin.
Yes.
Let's hear from Christopher now. Go on. No, you finished.
Oh, no. Anything. I was just going to say, he's the first time caller in, wasn't he? But he did everything he had to do, so that was good. He's a optician, bless him. Oh, no one deserves that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll come next time we're in Boston. I presume that's Boston in America rather than Boston in Lincolnshire.
I think he said Boston, Massachusetts, didn't he?
Oh, did he? Okay.
I think he, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll come and say hello.
Yes,
next time we're in North America. Right, let's hear from Christopher now, who's not from Boston.
Hello, this is Christopher. I'm a first-time caller-inner from Gark.
Oh,
hang on a minute. There we go. And let's hear from Christopher, who's not from Boston.
Hello, this is Christopher. I'm a first-time caller-inner from Gartcosh in North Lanarkshire. And I'm an audio describer. That's my job. And I felt I must protest against Royfield's depiction and disdain for Roy and his lack of narrative purpose and his apparent desire for him to be propelled from the show. I feel I must protest on behalf of Roy's everywhere. I'm Roy, and we Roys, we do not generate plot in life, and we do not generate drama. And we do not generate great humour or pathos or emotional depth. But I do think that there is a place for the Roys of this world as purely reactive beings. There has to be somebody to react to the madness. So I feel there is a place for wee Roys in life as well as in Ambridge. Wee Roys bring balance. That's what I think. The other thing I wanted to say is that one day I hope to be really good friends with Leonard. Anyway, I love the podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Robert.
You know what? I agree 100% with him.
I do. I have to say something first. I had to listen to his call twice because the first time I was so distracted by his beautiful voice.
Lovely.
Oh, Christopher. And as soon as he said he's an audio describer, and I was like, well, of course you are, because I could listen to that voice all day long. If people don't know what audio describers are, by the way, they're people who do extra description, aren't they, in film and TV for people who are visually impaired. Yeah. I used to work for a company that did audio describing. I don't think I ever met Christopher. I would have remembered that voice. Oh. Anyway, yes, I do think he has a point. I felt really sad as he was saying it, but I know what he means. It's like some people aren't, you don't have to be the sort of protagonist or antagonist in the drama. You can just be the bystander who are a sort of catalyst for the drama, aren't you then? You sort of go through the reaction unchanged, but you make the reactions happen. And I guess that is what Roy is. And I agree. I like Roy. Sorry, Roy Field, but you're wrong.
Yeah. It's only because he's called Royf.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? It's just, you know, as long as we forget his early dabbles in racism, I think Roy is a nice character, and he does have a really important role in the village because he connects lots of people. He connects because of where he works. He connects the likes of, you know, Linda and your Grey Gables lot with his friends who are the Grundys or the, you know, Tom Archer. Or he's an important bridge, I think, between the different bits of Ambridge. So, yeah, I'm with you, Christopher. Royfield's wrong. And please call in again so I can hear your voice.
Yes, please do. You'll have to have a meet-up when you go up to Edinburgh next year, maybe.
Oh, yeah, get up to North Lanarkshire. And I just want you... I might find some things you've audio described, because I can just imagine drifting off to sleep with that lovely voice in my ear.
There you are.
I'm quite taken.
You've had an impact.
You really have.
You've had an impact. Shall we have an email?
Have we not got another call?
You've got a couple. Yeah, we have. I'm going to do some more calls, but I thought take a look at a couple of emails.
Okay, yes, I've got some emails. Oh, no? Look. Well, one of them is a sort of message for Lucy. So I'm hoping that Lucy, wherever she might be at the moment, I know she's travelling around a bit, but if she's listening to the podcast, this is a message from Christopher Sanderson. And he says, hello, Lucy. I don't venture onto Twitter, so I hope my message reaches you this way. Now, obviously, because we've got the email and Lucy hasn't, I thought we'd better read it out. He says, in a recent podcast, you mentioned being in Jersey next weekend, which now that depends on when you sent the email as to when next weekend is and when this goes. It's getting very confusing, isn't it? I should just read it. he says, coincidentally, I will be in Jersey to do a day's consultancy at school, and my wife Hillary is tagging along too, so we'd be very pleased to get together for an Archers chat. So basically, Lucy, if you're listening to your own podcast, which I imagine you are, because you probably listen to me and Robert do it and go, oh God, I'm definitely coming back. I can't let those two do it again. He's going to be in Jersey, this Dumpty Dummer, Chris Sanderson, with his wife Hillary, and they are going to be there from the 18th to the 21st, I think is what I can make out. So we're both keen followers of The Archers and Dumpty Dum. You won't have heard me calling because I haven't got round to it yet, but I have emailed in, written a review and bought from the shop. And also Hillary and Christopher sent in a Dumpty Dum, which they sang with Jacqueline Berto. So he's ensconced in the land of Dumpty Dum. So if you're going to be in Jersey at that time, Lucy, get in touch with Chris Sanderson. There we go.
Yes, we can give you his details.
Yes, we will indeed. Just wanted to make sure Lucy gets that message.
Excellent.
And I suppose if anyone else is in Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah, why
Let's
not?
Let's all pop across to Jersey.
I've never been. Got some brilliant bunkers,
nor
apparently.
Have I. Yeah. Oh, yes, there will. Well, isn't there that big cave that the Nazis lived in or something?
Mm. Lots of World War II and Nazi bunkers and tunnels and things in Jersey, so I keep meaning to go.
You'd be in your element.
I would indeed. I bloody love a bunker. Oh, yes. That sounded really Can sinister.
Because like, she said bunker, not bunk up.
Thank you for pointing
Tense
that
up
out.
Tense up first, bunk up later.
Do you want me to read the other email that we've got?
Yes, please.
So the other email is from Fiona Frank, and the subject is Kate and Lullabies. It says, hi, I'm a one-time caller in Aurora, and also sent a dumpty dum for my weekly music session that hopefully you'll use one day. So Roy Field, get on that. And now she's an email in Aurora. And Fiona says, I just heard Kate with Xander again on the Onubus. And that's how she spelt it, Onubus. I like that. And it reminded me how lovely it was that they had thought to get her to sing a South African lullaby to him. It's so significant for the scriptwriters to include that tiny detail as such a good reminder of her story and her past. Love, Fiona in Lancaster, although she is just about to go to Poland for a month. And she says, I'll remember to take some zlotys or whatever they use there. LOL.
Crikey.
Yeah, she did do a little South African lullaby, didn't she?
Yeah, it was lovely, but I wouldn't go to Poland right now. I mean, we don't know what's happening at
they
the end of the month.
They might not lay back again.
They might not lay back in.
I don't know. I'd rather do that and stay in Poland, I think, at the minute.
Yeah, give me crack off any time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But let's not go down that
What
world.
Were you going to say?
Down that.
Let's not, no.
No.
Let's not.
Well, no. I was going to say let's not go down the Brexit route, but any other route that might have been in your filthy mind as well, we'll stay away from.
Yes. No, what were you going to say? You're going to say something about something else.
Was
you?
I?
About the lullaby.
Oh, yeah. Just the, yeah, it was. I mean, it was. But also, it's not like, should we really be holding Kate up as a lovely maternal mother figure? I'm not so sure we should.
Well, I think the implication was she was very good with youngsters. But as soon as they got their own opinions...
Yes.
She wasn't that interested because she couldn't handle that. That she liked the as if they're like a puppy dog or a kitten, that's fine. But when they start saying, actually, I don't want to be a vegan and your scented candles smell like arse, then she's not interested.
That's true, when they have agency, I suppose, isn't it? Which is exactly the reason. I mean, I think I'm the same, but the difference is that's pretty much the reason why I don't have children and I have a puppy instead. Because they don't grow out of that stage, and that suits me just fine.
No, and if you get tired of them, you can always send them to a farm in Wales.
How could you say
not
that?
Not yours, not Tina.
Not after
Tina.
You know I love Tina. Tina as well.
Met.
Oh,
met
you bonded
to meet
with
Tina is to love her. I know. There's a lovely photograph of me that Angela took in Brighton of putting out my park bench lip. cuddling Tina, and I really am cuddling her there.
Oh, she loves like a proper cuddle, Tina. Oh yeah.
I'm her new favourite uncle.
She got properly dumpty dum induced this weekend.
Oh gosh, didn't she?
Didn't she just?
Oh. Right, back to the calls.
Yes, sorry. Yes,
here's Ash. Ash from Broccoli.
Hi, it's Ash from Broccoli. I have to admit, I've not been listening with my usual intensity to the podcast over the last few weeks. So apologies if it's been discussed before.
Outrageous.
But I'm just wondering if I'm alone in simply not having Will Grundy's Damascene conversion about his kind of outlook on the world and his work and his priorities in life. He just seemed to completely change his mind and his whole kind of worldview after one chat with Ian. I can't believe that someone who is so blinkered and single-tracked would just literally turn on the sixpence in terms of his worldview and his employment and stuff, not having it. Oh, and thank you also for putting me out of my misery in revealing who the voiceover is for those really creepy Brexit ads. I knew I recognised the voice. That said, Roy Field, you're absolutely right. I'm not impressed by anyone who takes this government shilling. Loving the show. Bye for now.
Ah. He's right, isn't he? About
what?
Well, about Will's sudden about turn. I mean, I could understand him having an about turn after what you know, I think sometimes people do have a sort of Damascene conversion after a suicide attempt or something like that, when you come so close to the bottom that you start, you know, to go back to the, that I can buy into. However, the catalyst for it was Ian. That doesn't ring true at all. I mean, have they ever even really spoken to each other before? As if, you know, and Ian's go, oh, you're a great dad, Will. A, no, he's not. And B, how do you know? How much time have you spent with Will Grundy and his children?
It's a big step, isn't it, to just chuck in a job that you love and gives you self-worth, that also has a lovely little cottage with it.
Yeah.
To chuck that in. That is difficult for me to process.
You know, as far as I can make out, the main reason for him chucking the job was access to guns. Well, so if somebody's suicidal, that they will find a way, you know. It doesn't seem like, oh, well, if you don't work with the guns, then you'll be all right. That's not how it works, you know. So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think obviously the whole thing with Martin Gibson and whatever was putting stress on him. So it probably was, you know, not doing his mental health any good working there, because he didn't have a good working relationship with Martin Gibson and I suppose had a lot of pressure on him. So that makes sense. But yeah, the whole chat with Ian and the sudden turnaround, yeah, I didn't buy it.
No, I think that in my experience, people, when something happens to them, they think, they say they are going to change, and they change a little bit, but then you go back on to a course that leads in a similar direction to where you were heading before, and it takes a lot of effort to turn a ship around.
I mean, with most, you know, speaking with my hat on in my old jobs and working in mental health, you know, for it's very rare that somebody, and this goes for sort of mental health, any sort of addictions, anything like that, you know, it's very rare that somebody decides to make a change and they succeed on the first go. But then we don't know if we'll succeed on the first go. You know, it still might take time. So I'd like to give the script writers benefit of the doubt that this will be an ongoing process and not just, oh, we'll fix overnight, because somebody who's actively suicidal is not fixed overnight. You know, so we'll...
Yeah, because there's that three stage, isn't there, that you've planned and you have the means to do it, and it's the CPR, isn't it?
Yeah.
CPR of suicide.
Yeah, and very often somebody who, you know, when people reach the point where they actually do commit suicide, very often prior to that seem as well as they've ever seemed, because the burden of, you know, once you've made that decision and you've actively planned and prepared, it's a burden lifted to people who are in that condition, and they actually can present as well as they've ever been. You know, so the fact that Will's suddenly presenting very well and lucid, and I'd be more concerned about than I would.
There was a hint of that concern from Clary, and I was talking to Kerry Warbis on Saturday, and she said she had a guffaw at this, but I said, well, you know, maybe it rings true. Is that when Will had gone down to the river?
Yeah.
And Clary said, you went down to the river. Why did you do that? Or what were you doing there? And that was plainly because she was worried he was going to jump in the river. So
yeah, your family,
she's got a handle on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when your family member has done something like that, it doesn't matter how many times they tell you they're okay now, you're not going to just go, oh, all right then, you know. That's something that's going to profoundly affect you and your relationship with that person and how you care for them, you know, deeply. So I'll be interested to see how the whole thing plays out, because if it is just now, oh, that's never revisited and never sort of talked about and he's fine now, then that doesn't really ring true. But I think there'll be bumps on the road for Will.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We all encounter bumps and potholes, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think he's, you know, his about turn is going to be quite as straightforward, and especially as he's not got employment yet, you know, and there'll come a point where that's going to cause issues in itself if he's not working and he hasn't got an income and all of that, you know.
Yeah, and he's just experienced the second significant bereavement in a 12-month period as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and it's not just for, you know, his granddad was old and, it, you know, it's a different type of bereavement, but he's got to deal with Poppy. That's where the difficulty will be, because Poppy won't have that rationale that an adult has. You know, you go, well, they're 98 and they've had a good life and all that. Poppy's lost her great granddad and her mum. You know, two people. And Poppy was always sat on Joe Grundy's knee, wasn't she? It was always playing with Joe, and oh, Joe's watching through the window with Poppy and all of that. So that she's gonna, you know, it's gonna be how he deals with her, and parenting her is gonna be the tricky bit.
Yeah. We haven't really touched on Joe, have we? And we mentioned him in the monologue.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we knew it was coming. And I think it was really beautifully done. I think the whole sort of cider press thing, it was almost like that the grandfather's clock nursery rhyme, wasn't it? You know, that it stopped working at the time when he was ready to pass, you know, but he had his last night, his last pressing, last night at the cider club. And
What was this thing people were mentioning on Twitter about a cucumber? Because before I'd heard it, I thought he died in some kind of terrible Tory MP kind of a way. But
because Eddie said, so when Eddie got back to the house, so they all sort of staggered back to the house. Joe had gone home earlier, and Eddie and the boys went back to the house and they went to bed. And he saw, I think Joe's light was on. And he wanted to check that the cucumber hadn't disagreed with him, because he'd had the cucumber sandwiches or something, I think, that Lillian had
bought. Okay.
So, yeah, that's all I remember about cucumber. But, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that's one thing I have in common with the late Joe Grundy. I mean, they do tend to repeat,
don't they? They do repeat. Terrible indigestion. Cucumber and green peppers. That's,
Oh, I don't have a problem with green peppers.
Oh, no, I do. Terrible.
Just cucumber. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, yes. Rest in peace, Joe.
Absolutely. And you know, like I say, we've already sort of grieved the passing of Ted Kelsey, haven't we? But, Joe Grundy, that'll be just not hearing his voice anymore. He is the Archers, isn't he, that voice?
Does that mean we're going to have some more Bert?
I think we'll have to.
To fulfil the role.
I think we will have to, won't we? Because,
is that why they brought Leonard in?
Ah, maybe. Did Leonard come in before he died? Before the actor died? I don't know. I suppose you'd be sort of, you know, if he was getting on a bit, Joe Grundy was getting on a bit anyway, they're going to off him at some point, I suppose. Maybe. I mean, but Leonard's a very different, because he's not rough. Yeah. Is it? You know, what I love about Joe Grundy and Bert Fry is they're rough around the edges, and they're proper, like, you know, they've got a side to them. Whereas Leonard at the moment just seems like a very sweet man. And I like Leonard a lot, but very sweet man.
Shall we hear from the good professor?
Oh, let's.
Dr. Nicola Headlam. I don't know if she's a professor.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Dr. Nicola Headlam here. I am calling to tell you what my PhD is in. Yes, you're right, I'm not a medical doctor, although we doctors of the social sciences often say, you know, there's that thing where, is there a doctor in the house? It's very important on a doctor of philosophy to say, I messed the joke up.
Don't worry, dear. Start again.
And if you're a doctor of philosophy, rather than administering CPR or anything useful like that, you say, but of course, we're all dying in the existential sense. And so that's it's one for the social science PhDs out there. My doctorate is in urban planning from the University of Manchester. And that has led to me being a researcher in a couple of British universities. But more recently, I think I said to you, I've been the most senior civil servant with a pan-northern brief for the last year, and I've just stepped down from doing that. I was head of the Northern Powerhouse for Her Majesty's Government. But I just organised a big gig on the 13th of September, and I'd been ignoring a grumbling appendix. So I've had a month recovering from an appendectomy after a necrotic appendix, which is a bit foul. I just wanted to say, Roy, in as regards the fact that everybody keeps calling to pull you up, I've found this in academic cultures as well. Quite often people kind of get really into sort of correcting and all the rest of it. And I think some people think it's sort of they're listening or something. And what I think is you should be ruder and more radical in response. Take care. Thanks for all you do. And I'll call in again with more Archer's content soon. Bye.
Well, I'm up for being ruder and more radical, aren't you, Angela?
Always. Always. Always room to be ruder and more radical. Get well soon, Nicola Headlam, though. That sounds all. A necrotic appendix is not fun. So, you poor thing. Ugh.
Oh, my side's hurting just thinking about it.
Yeah, right. So I hope you're getting lots of TLC and rest and looking after yourself. However, urban planning, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I've got my friend who lives in San Francisco. She's a planner and she deals with such things like that. But she went off to do a PhD in urban planning. But she got a bit bored with it, so gave up after 2 years. I think she was missing the money she was making as well as a San Francisco planner.
I think it's really intrigues me. So I've got a little thing about, as you'll know if you know me, about sort of brutalist architecture, and I've got a little sort of quite fascinated about town, like mid-20th century town planning, and you know, the sort of new towns and things like that. It's my little obsession. And a friend of mine has just written a book, which has just come out, which might, if you're into that sort of thing, might be up your street. It's called Car Park Life. And it's by Gareth E. Rees. And it's a book about retail car parks and their sort of importance in our lives and how much we take them for granted. And it's really, really good. I read it a little while ago. But so that sort of stuff fascinates me. So, maybe we should have a little urban planning podcast, maybe.
Oh, we could do that. Urban Planning Corner.
Now that Map Corner's got its own podcast, I think we should have Urban Planning Corner. What do you reckon? Roy Frontline,
yeah, definitely. I'm up for it. I can be the innocent abroad who asks the dozy questions. You can be the enthusiastic amateur. My friend Sean can be one of the experts, and we can get your pal, what's your pal's name?
My pal, Gareth E. Rees. He's just written Car Park Life.
Gareth.
I'll plug his book because I'm not just saying it because he's a friend. He's actually my friend's boyfriend. I know him fairly well, but the book is really good. I read it, an advanced copy, so they wanted a quote for the, for the blurb. And I really loved it. I didn't even have to lie or anything. So, yes, available at all.
And we could get my friend John.
John Grindrod, who I'm a massive fan of. So he wrote a book called Concretopia. And in fact, I've got one of his books right on my desk in front of me as we speak, called Outskirts, which is about the...
I've got it, it's here.
...on the Greenbelt. Yes.
Yep, it's kind of his version of Nigel Slater's Toast.
Yes. So I'm a bit of a fangirl of John Grindrod. So
we'll talk later.
Yes,
we're going to hook you
gonna
up.
Going
to
hook
so
us up. Brilliant.
yeah, because I haven't seen him for a couple of years, and I tell you what, he's one of the funniest human beings on the planet.
Oh really?
Pant-wettingly hilarious.
He's good on Twitter. I'll get at Grindrod on Twitter.
Yep.
If you're into your brutalism and concrete and urban planning and that sort of business, then follow at Grindrod on Twitter. He's I like his stuff.
He's a wonderful chap.
Yes.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare Short-Term Insurance Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, I think it's about time we caught up with the social media events in this week's Dumpty Dum Land. And for that, we need to call upon Millie Bell.
Yay!
Good day, everyone. Well, I'm going to dedicate this week's social media roundup to Joe Grundy and his demise. And I want to thank one of our listeners, Stuart Arundell, because he did two things this week. He gave me a graphic that I could use on our page, which I really appreciated. And that was really very generous of him, because he usually uses his talents on another page. And also he put up a list of highlights of Joe's life that we have listened to. So I just thought I'd read those out, because they really, for me, brought home why I enjoyed the character of Joe, even though he often made me a bit grumpy because he was a bit of a taker, not a giver. But this proves that I wasn't always right. So they are: being with Nick in hospital when she died, dancing with Nick, discovering Tumble Tussock Orchard, walking down to breakfast at Grey Gables after the flood in his long johns.
Getting
a ferret stuck in his trousers. Omi Farmer's lung. The false teeth in the cider. Claiming the free massage from Linda. Catching a birthday drink from David Archer. Most years. Killing the ferret with a hammer. Bringing Jem to Bartleby. Clipping the ferret's nails in the kitchen. Creating cider day. Getting lessons on using the internet and hogging one of the computers in the bull, losing Grange Farm, and Mexican Night. So thank you so much, Stuart, for posting those up, because it reminded me why I enjoyed the comedic relief of Joe. And I asked people if they would like to leave their thoughts below when I had put up that I thought it was a beautiful episode. And lots of people agreed with me, some not so much. So let's see what you had to say. Megan Eliza Stott said, "I really liked it. Very respectful to the memory of Joe and in turn Edward. The bit when Will said, 'We will have to ask Grandad when we got home,' oh, really got me." And Gillian Corrigan said yes, and she also loved Eddie Simple, "Bye Dad." Paul Devlin said that he'd said his piece yesterday, but he still wasn't sold on it. "It was nice, it was lovely, but I'm sure lots of us have lost that senior member who we all love to think was invincible. There was no awful shock that came across, no huge, immediate, inconsolable grief. Clary seemed aloof almost. I don't think the aftermath was a fitting tribute. So, again, I'll give the benefit of the doubt and hope that the funeral is." John Custom Merritt agreed, said that was a poor script again. Linda Curtis suggested we wait until the funeral before we comment. And Joe Edwards said, "Yep, I felt no sense of grief and heard no sense of grief either." Penelope Matheson said, "Agree, and no matter how old someone is, it's always a shock when they die. Instead, it sounded like a run-of-the-mill event, and I don't even like Joe's character." And Janice Betson said he was 98. They would not have been shocked. Sad, but not shocked. They would also have been glad that he died at the farm and didn't have to leave it. Al Williams said it was very touching. And Joe Edwards said, "I cry at the drop of a hat about all kinds of stuff. But I've listened twice to the episode to see if I'm not getting something. But still, no, I wasn't moved at all. I thought the monologue was stilted, ill-delivered, and I got no sense of the shock and pain of discovering someone you love has passed. No matter how old someone is or how expected, would you really have all those words to say? I couldn't hear any sorrow in his voice, just a script. So sorry, guys, it just didn't work for me." Kelly Schroeder disagreed. "I loved it. It was exactly like real life. When I first listened, I was just taking in the news. It wasn't until the second listen that I cried. And the third listen gave me that grief when we realise, as a society, that a certain way of life is dying out, for better or worse. Some folks seem to want all reactions at once, but grief doesn't work that way." Jean Bell, "It was superb, and how poignant that the actors managed to do it so beautifully. It must have been hard for them, but the emotions needed were real. If it affected us, I imagine they needed a group hug at the end of the recording." Oh, Jean, you're so thoughtful, and I think you're right. Stephen Bowden said, "I'm clearly in a small minority. While most of the episode was excellent, I found Eddie's opening monologue to be mawkish and unrealistic. I'm sure it was intended as a tribute to Edward Kelsey, but it didn't do it for me. That wasn't the real Eddie, and it wasn't the real Joe. Abigail Downham said, I thought it was lovely. Cried on my dog walk where I was listening. Moving but not mawkish. Sad but not EastEnders hysterical. Nicely timed. There was so many more like that. I think it was one of the biggest posts we've had in ages. So thank you to everybody who contributed. Continue to contribute because I know that Yoko Bear will be watching it next week. And to finish our week, and on a completely different note, Witherspoon put up a post asking for your cold and flu remedies, and he's going to pass those on to Lucy V. So once again, thank you for a sensational week, everybody. We really appreciate the effort that you put into to contributing, and we love sifting through them all to decide which ones we're going to use in our roundup. So I really appreciate those of you who are funny, those of you that are honest, and those of you that just get stuck in. So until I speak to you next time, hooroo!
Hooroo! Thanks, Millie Bell. Are we able to block listeners that we don't agree with?
I think we should. No. Isn't that the just way of the world now? If you don't like something someone says, just cancel them.
Blocked. Sorry.
I think
I cried on my cottage pie.
Well,
while
I had
listening.
To on it was Thursday night, wasn't it? When when Eddie. No, hang on. Yeah, the monologue was on Thursday.
Yeah, he did.
And because I was doing a... No, it wasn't. It was Friday. I don't know what day it is. Friday, because I was on doing a tour show.
You were up in Warwick, weren't you?
Yeah, Coventry, Warwick Arts Centre in Coventry. And I was listening to it in the green room, and I had to turn it off about a minute in because I thought, I'm going to go on stage with puffy eyes. I can't... I've got to be on stage in an hour. If I listen to this now, I'm going to be in bits. So I had to turn it off and listen to it on Saturday morning. But I just thought, I disagree with it, like, because I think he was a bit shocked, but not, you know, it's not like they haven't been waiting for this moment. It's not like you haven't, my grandmother died last year, she was 95, and she was going right up to the end, you know. But we knew it was going to happen one day. So when she did pass away, it was really... I tell you, how I would describe it was really sad, but it wasn't tragic. So, I mean, she was 95. She'd had a good long life. She'd been fit and active right up till the end. You know, because she was somebody who it would have been very hard. She had 9 kids and would, you know, still doing her own shopping and her own cleaning. And so it would have been really hard to watch her sort of fade away. And, you know... When someone gets to that age, it's in the back of your mind. You know, every time I saw my nan, I made sure I did a good goodbye just in case. Because, you know, you are sort of, even if you're not outwardly preparing for it, you are sort of mentally aware that that day is going to come. Yeah. So, and then when it did, it was sad, but it was also, everything was, you know, when I was in Glasgow when she died and I came back, that day, and everyone was just, it was just all lovely stories and lovely, but it was a happy is not the right word, but it's a very positive day, you know. It wasn't, we weren't all bawling our eyes out, we weren't all, you know, in shock, and it was just like sharing stories and bit, and that felt real to me. What Eddie with his finding his dad that way, that felt real.
I agree. And there's going to be plenty more of those stories to come in the weeks to come. I'm looking forward to the funeral.
But I hope they give him a good old send-off and everyone just gets hammered on cider. I want to see some ferrets in the funeral procession. And Bartleby will have to pull him, won't he?
God, that's how they're going to do it. Bartleby is going to carry the coffin on the trap.
See, now I'm welling up.
Oh, sorry, I need a hanky.
Oh, God, I can't bear it. Do you know the bit?
I'm filling up, yeah.
There was a bit, two bits that really made me almost go listening. And one was a silly joke that really made me smile. But it was when Jolene and Toby were talking about him in the bar. And he said something like, I won't get it right now. He said something like, how many pints he must have drunk in this bar? And Jolene said, a lot more than he bought. Which I just thought was lovely.
Oh, yeah. That was
such a lovely line.
I think they'll say that at my funeral as well.
And then there was, it was when... really rung true when Will said, "We'll ask Grandad when we get home." Because my dad passed away 11 years ago, and I still, you know, particularly if something goes wrong with my car, my first thought is, "Oh, I'll ask Dad." You know, that's after 11 years. So that really rang true, and that really made me go, "Oh," you know, because I know that feeling so well to go, "Oh, I'll ask Dad." Oh, no. No.
Don't you think that some people who are commenting here, either they haven't experienced this in their lives, or if they have, they've experienced it in a slightly different way, because we all experience grief and death and handle it in our own way and go through different stages at different times.
There are two situations in life, I think, where I would never, ever, ever say, "But you wouldn't do that." And one is when someone's died, and the other is when somebody's been assaulted in some way. Because I think there are things where we say, "But you wouldn't do that." And it's like, you don't know what you would do. There's no right or wrong way. And there are as many different ways of dealing with death and grief and all the terrible things that come with it as there are people. You know, everyone has their own way of dealing with it. So I don't, when people say, "Oh, you wouldn't do that," it's like, well, maybe you wouldn't do that, but I might, you know, or someone else might. I remember when, after my dad died, actually, no, this is a story I'm not going to tell on air. I've just realised. Forget that. But, because it involves. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, you know, people do.
Yeah.
We project what we would do onto other people, and that's not necessarily how it is, you know. And that's why when we project what we think we would do. Until it happens to you. The stand-up show that I'm doing at the moment, I tell a story in it about I was assaulted on a tube. And I always thought, you know, assumed I'd be the sort of person who kicked someone in the bollocks and call them a pervert if they assaulted, you know, tried to assault me in a public place. But that's not what I did. I froze, and then and that's why I always say I would never, ever judge anyone's reaction to anything, because until you have been there, you don't know what you'll do. And also, even if you have been there, the way you reacted isn't necessarily the only way to react to something. So just because, you know, you might do X, Y, Z doesn't mean everyone would.
Absolutely.
So, yes. But I just thought it was really lovely. I thought Eddie's little monologue was really lovely with him, you know. And
There was a bit. I just wish we'd have been able to hug and kiss each other a little bit from time to time. Like Will and their kids. And that's so true, is that... That younger fathers now, they don't think, don't have a second thought about hugging and kissing,
their
male children,
absolutely,
the young boy, and in my generation, I mean, I want to hug my dad, and I think might not have told this story on here, but last Christmas, I went home, and I used to go home for a couple of days, and I rent a car and I drive up there and to Wakefield, and then I leave on Boxing Day because I do have a life outside of, you know, family Christmases. And it was in the back of my mind. And I just thought, you know, the last time I gave my dad a hug was the day after Mum's funeral. And he asked for a hug from me and I said, "You're not usually like that." And he said, there's less of us now. And in the back of my mind, I thought, fewer. But anyway, never mind, Dad. No, I did think that, and I laughed to myself as I did that. But it was a lovely hug, and I haven't since, and that's 12 years ago, or more, 14 years ago probably. And this Christmas I was leaving, and Dad's older, and he's 84 now, and you know he's very sharp in mind, but you know he's a little bit wobbly. And so I just as we were in the garden, he was about to wave me goodbye in the car, I approached him and said, "Give us a hug." And he gave me a hug, but it was like hugging a China doll, you know. It was quite, I didn't want to break his ribs, let's put it that way. And then I said, "I love you, Dad." And his response was, "All right."
Oh, thanks.
Cheers, mate.
They're just a product of their upbringing, aren't they? And just a product of, you know. Yeah.
Anyway, goodbye Joe. You'll be missed. Who's next? Who's next? Who's going to cork it next?
It's got to be Peggy, isn't it? I mean, let's be clear here. We're talking about the characters, not the actors. We're not taking a sweepstake on that. But I think there's been a lot of setup with her legacy and stuff, hasn't there? So, although having said that, I don't think they will kill off Peggy Woolley unless maybe June wants to retire. Yeah, I mean,
well, she is 100. I mean, it's increasingly less likely that she'll be around for another 10 years. So, let's put it that way. Gosh, but then you think, well, if we lose so many patriarchs and matriarchs and archetypes and icons of the series, that kind of it flings it out of orbit.
Well, it's
in some
weird
way,
to think,
it?
You know, who will the next? So you've got June. I forgot her surname. What's her surname? Spence plays Peggy Woolley. Obviously, who's been in it for what 60-odd years, whereas other you know, there's characters that have been in it a long time since they were born, and you know, will probably be in it till they die, but I'd say most of them have had more than one actor, you know. So you've got Clary, who'll probably be in the show, or you've got you know, I suppose Jenny Darling and Lillian have always been the same actors, have they? No, Lillian hasn't, has she? No,
so, Lillian hasn't. Clary is back to the original
between,
actress though, isn't she?
So
that I thought was interesting, that people started complaining about the new Clary, who was actually the old Clary, because they didn't believe it was Clary. I think, get with the program.
No.
There's no pleasing some people.
You know, that sort of person who's been there consistently the same throughout and grown with their character. David Archer, I suppose, is the only.
Oh, he's getting on my nerves at the moment, though.
This whole abattoir business I don't know. I haven't really. I'm struggling to care. Maybe because I don't eat meat.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, it is important, but you know, there is an abattoir, and I don't want to get into it. But who cares?
Yeah.
Listen, we need to
crack on
to plug the. We do need to crack on, and we need to plug the Dumpty Dum Live Brum extravaganza, which is taking place on the 9th of November.
Which just so happens to be my 43rd birthday. So I will be there celebrating my birthday. The thing I'm most looking forward to about Dumpty Dum Live is my boyfriend's coming, because it's my birthday. We're making a sort of weekend of it. We've got a nice hotel and making a weekend of it. But my boyfriend is coming to the Dumpty Dum Live. Not only has he never listened to Dumpty Dum, he's never listened to The Archers. So he's going to be wondering what the hell is going on. And I think the most entertaining thing to do at Dumpty Dum Live will be to sit and watch his face as it all unfolds around him. But no, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Saturday 9th of November, I'll be there. You'll be there.
I'll be there.
Roy Fields and Lucy will be there. Yokel Bear will be there. And
absolutely.
Susie Ridd, who plays Tracy Horribin, will be there.
Tracy.
And now Lexi will be there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And Derek will be there. Derek Fletcher will be there. That's the, quite. Ugh. 9th of November, it's 2 p.m., the town hall in Birmingham.
Go to
the Dumpty Dum website for all the details.
And
there's also a meal at the Picture and Piano
and then
for a fiver.
That's it.
And afterwards,
it's at the gin vaults. So come and drink some scruff gin. And do come along to that if you can, because like I say, it's my birthday and I want to pretend I've got friends. So the more the merrier for the dinner and the gin vaults, because we'll have a couple of drinks, some nice food, and I'll try not to cry about being 43.
Oh, 43 is easy. Although, you know, I find even numbers easier than odd numbers.
Really?
And I'm coming up to an odd number in October.
When's your birthday? Your birthday soon, is it?
October 22nd.
October 22nd. Oh, very soon. Ah.
I know.
Ah, there you go.
Gosh. It's next week, in fact.
Hey.
Yeah. Just send all your presents to me, care of Oxford University. I'm sure it will find me. Although there are three or four different Robert Wilsons that work at Oxford University.
So you've got a common name. That's the problem.
I have.
You want to be a Royfield. Well, that's what you
Wilson.
Want to be.
Royfield Wilson. Well, that kind of works.
Yeah.
Listen, Angela, have we got a tweet of the week this week?
Oh, do you know what? I have absolutely forgotten
oh, no.
to do a tweet of the week. I knew there was something I'd forgotten to do. Oh, how shoddy. So, yeah, the quick
answer is... It's my fault for not reminding you.
No, we haven't got a tweet of the week this week. But I imagine it would probably be Kerry Warbis. It usually is, isn't it?
It's definitely Kerry Warbis.
Let's just say it's Kerry Warbis. Yes.
Well done, Kerry Warbis.
How absolutely lovely it was to meet the Dumpty Dummers that came to the Brighton meetup on Saturday. It was such a lovely bunch of people. And I really enjoyed myself. So thank you very much, particularly Kerry, who sort of did the heavy lifting of organising that. Thank you very much. And we played somebody who came, Vincent, who came along, whose mm-hmm. Twitter name I can't remember. Sorry, Vincent.
At Buddhist or something like that?
Buddhist, isn't it? Or something like that. I can't. Anyway, he brought along an Archer's card game. And we all had to do impressions from various different Archer's characters, which is a lot of fun. So, yeah, more of that sort of thing, please. And if you do ever want to organise a meetup where you live, then you can always get in touch with Dumpty Dum and they'll put the word out for you on the airwaves. That's what we did. And, definitely. We had a lovely little turnout.
Yeah, Vincent's Twitter handle is a bit Buddhist. That's his name. And his at is... @ I'm Vincent Murphy.
Ah, there we go.
So thank you, Vincent Murphy. Also, Quentin Rayner was there. I didn't realise that Quentin is a reporter on East Midlands BBC.
Yes, he's very...
He must have come down from Nottingham.
Yes, he did. He said he had a sister, I think, who lived locally, so he killed two birds with one stone.
Oh, okay.
So that was... people from far and wide came down to join us, which was really lovely. Yeah.
And it was nice to see Sarah Brown as well.
It was.
And Laura was there, and
Olivia
Angela
was there,
the other Angela.
The other Angie was there.
Olivia.
Just a really lovely, lovely bunch of people. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much. And our special Dumpty Dum, which was recorded up Gloucester Passage, will be airing probably next week.
You'll be pleased to know anyone who's heard my singing voice that I very much mind.
Yes. Yeah. I stuffed a dog chew in her mouth to stop her. Right, this is your bit now.
Oh, crikey, is it? I'm not looking at the script. I'm a professional, don't you know?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, right,
we've done
that. No, I've got it. Remember to get in contact. Right. You can say, is that bit? Yeah, am I doing it right? Yeah.
Remember
to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203-031-3105 to leave a message.
Wonderful. You can find Millie Bell at Dumpty Dum. That's @ Dumpty Dum, all one word. Angela is @
Angela Barnes.
Not too difficult to remember. Uh-huh. And I can be found @ Naked Fingers.
Excellent. And if
thank
I,
you very
can
much.
Can I do a little plug before we go, do you think? Because
go on, yeah,
I've got some shows coming up. I'm still touring my show Rose Tinted, which has been on tour now for most of this year, but there's still a few dates left. And there are tickets left for the show at Comedia in Brighton on the 23rd of October. And also I will be on the... 1st, I believe, of November. Certainly that weekend, the 1st and 2nd of November, I am in St Austell in Cornwall on the Friday. And on the Saturday, I will be in Dartmouth. And I am also doing a show at Chichester Festival, at the Chichester Festival Theatre, but it's actually at their festival, if that makes sense. So tickets are available via my website. It's angelabarnescomedy.co.uk, and I would love to see you there. And if you are a Dumpty Dummer, do come and say hello afterwards. Give me a tweet, let me know you're coming, and it'd be nice to meet you.
Yeah, do tell you what, do go and say hello to Angela, because you know, despite what everyone else says, she's really lovely.
Cheers, mate.
You are. It was so lovely. I mean, it was the first time we'd actually spoken at length, apart from over the airwaves. And I felt a bit bad because I realised that we were nattering together for most of the night in the corner. I think we should have mingled, really. But anyway,
well, I used the dog as my excuse. I did have a dog on my lap for most of the year, but I think we got to meet most of the people that came along, and we'll have to do another one.
Yeah, there were lots of people. Yeah. There were lots of people there. Definitely do another one. Now that I know how to get to Brighton and back in one piece. And it's only £51 on the train from
Oxford.
Gee
whiz, how do they do it and make a profit, these train companies, eh?
Who knows? Who knows? And that's got there's a free underground ticket with that as well.
That's like a travel card thing. Blimey.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. All right, then. Thank you very much, Angela.
Thank you.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye, folks. Bye.
Cheerio.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.